Greetings, Wilkinson here. Today, my guest is John Corr, and he is an actor. He's a cool guy, lives in Palm Springs. And where do we meet? I was thinking about this. Do you know where we met, Joan? We met in a bathroom.
I was just about to say, quite classically for both of us, quite on brand. Theater awards program.
Yeah, okay. So we just bumped into each other coming and going out of the bathroom. But he won a couple awards that year. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I told him already, his butt looks so great in the pants he was wearing. It's like, wow, I knew this guy in here.
That's good, yeah. Thank you.
Say hi to my people.
Hello to your people. John Corr, happy to be here.
Hi, John. That's why people saying bad. I do. I'm kidding. What do you want to talk about? You're gay.
What? Whoa. Okay. Wow. Wow. How presumptuous of you as I sit here in my 3-inch shorts in Palm Springs, California.
And they are pink. And they're very tight. Not really, guys. Don't get excited. Anyway. Let's start. So where are you from?
I grew up in a suburb of Philadelphia. And then I went to the University of Notre Dame in Indiana for college. And then I spent 7 years in Portland, Oregon, before now living here in Palm Springs.
Where did I study? What did you study?
I originally went with the intention of getting a degree in chemistry and mathematics, because I was a science nerd and a book nerd growing up.
Are you still one?
Yeah, less so. It's interesting now as an adult looking back at some of like my passions as a child and thinking, how much of that was just because I was kind of good at it and got praise for participating and doing well, and how much of it was actually genuine interest? And it's funny because the things like theater and singing and dancing that I was not very good at and did not get a lot of praise for growing up.
Really?
Are the things that stuck with me because they were my favorite things. And I did them even though I wasn't as naturally gifted. And because I've done them so much more, I've gotten so much better at it. Whereas stuff like, don't ask me to do too many integrals right now. My brain is a little rusty, you know?
So the passion came through.
Yeah, I think so. It won out in the end. So yeah, eventually my degree is in film, television, and theater.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's just a lot of physics and chemistry credits floating around in there as well.
Now, did you do theater stuff in Portland?
Yeah, I did a lot of theater in Portland. So when I first moved, I went to what was then called the Portland Actors Conservatory. Now it's just the Actors Conservatory. Don't know how they swung that. But I went there it was a 2-year like full-time program, studied acting in a really kind of like intensive way that I hadn't before. And from there and through there, like just worked with a lot of local Portland theater companies and was decently busy until COVID hit. And that's when I moved here.
Is your goal to just stay in theater, or are you thinking TV and movies and all that stuff as well, or just stick to theater?
It's so interesting because I just made this argument of sometimes the things that you're not naturally good at are the things that you should pursue. Counter argument, I'm really bad on film. I've tried it. It's like, it stresses me out, and I just don't think I come across the same way that I do on stage. I think on stage you're allowed to be really expressive and bold and not quite real, more the like suggestion of real in a way that you like can't get away with on film unless that's specifically what you're doing, how many films like that get made. But yeah, no, it's funny. My partner is like, oh yeah, a bunch of people that I've known who do acting just like make their paycheck by doing commercials or whatever, and then they do whatever else they want. I'm like, I can't see myself booking a commercial because I just am so awkward on screen. So no, I love theater. Theater is my passion. I love doing it live in front of other people, and it's what I've kind of built up my skill set around. So
you've been here how many years?
Coming up on 4, because I moved here in June of 2020. It was like the height of COVID.
Wow. And so how many productions have you been in since you've been here?
3 or 4 a year. So that's probably, coming up on like 12 to 15, somewhere in that range. I might be overestimating. That sounds like a lot, and I don't know if I could name them all.
What do you like about theater the most?
There is something about the energy of doing it live and the sort of inherent freedom that the audience gives you to play. I think anyone who comes to see a live stage show inherently is willing to give that like permission for you to like do something big and weird or something really intense and emotional. Like you have so much permission from the audience because they just want to see what it's all about. They want to experience it happening right in front of them. And so to that end, like I love a play where I get to cry, and I love a play where my character has no attachment to reality and like, doesn't have to do like real emotions because it's all shticky and fun and weird.
Right.
Because you get a lot of that kind of range with live theater. I know you can get that range with like film and TV and stuff too, but there's something about the live element and the audience attitude towards it that makes it really fun.
So I want to do independent film. I wanted to do that before I got into photography like 25 years ago, but I'm probably going to do it. So I should not put you on my list. You don't want to audition for my film.
Well, I would say if I'm on your list, I would happily audition. I would rather come in with the undersell and low expectations because it's very much not my bread and butter. It's not something that I feel super confident in my skill set for.
Yeah, you can learn. All right, let's go back to your personal life. Mm. So you grew up in Philly.
Yes.
And what is your gay story? Let's hear that.
Sure.
We talked earlier, as I always do with everybody, for a few minutes before we sit down and do this. But, you know, we want to hear the stories so that my listeners, who are often in small little towns and they don't have real gay life experience. So what's yours?
Yeah. So I grew up in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, which is a pretty small town. It's a suburb of Philadelphia. And I have 5 siblings. And my parents and family are very Catholic. And I had, honestly, a very lovely childhood. Everyone knew that it was a little different. And I think it was always a question of, is he just a little weird smart? Is he just a little weird gay? Like, what is the central piece of this weirdness? But it also kind of didn't matter. People liked me well enough, and I liked people well enough, so we were cruising through my childhood. But it is interesting because my dad's one of 11 siblings.
Whoa.
And my mom is one of 5.
Also a Catholic family.
Yeah, for sure. They were doing their God-given duty of procreating and spreading the gospel across the world or whatever. But it's interesting because I didn't have a close relative that was gay that I knew of anyway. Now I have some cousins or my mom's cousin. Like there are other gay members of my family that have sort of popped up, but it was not something that was ever felt like it was going to be comfortable to talk about with my family. But to that same degree, I was loved and supportive. So my gay coming out story is really of like a lame kind of fizzle. Basically I like didn't really date in high school. It wasn't important to me. I just sort of like jerked off in my room like every teenage boy does. And no, we didn't really have to worry too much about what I was jerking off to.
Wow.
Yeah. But then, so when I got to college, had a little more freedom, I dated both men and women, did the whole sexual awakening kind of thing. And
so you had girlfriends?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it very much enjoyed their company. Like I would not put myself at a perfect, 6 on McKinsey scale is like the most gay. So maybe I'm like a 4.5, 5. Very much gay, but didn't feel inauthentic to be exploring or whatever.
Right.
But by the time like Easter break of my freshman year rolled around, it was, hey, I know we're meeting up at our aunt's place for Easter. Would it be okay if I brought my boyfriend, the guy I'm dating now? Because I just date people and now it's a guy and I like him. And that was it. Like that was sort of the intro to the whole conversation, which I mean.
So did you ask both parents that or your mother or what?
That was both parents. Also, I think I brought it up to all of my siblings at the same. Like, I just didn't want to make a big deal out of it, and they felt like if I didn't, no one else would. And to their credit, mostly they didn't. Like, it was nice. It was funny because my mom suggested that I speak to a priest just to align it with my spirituality. Coming out to her as an atheist was harder than coming out as gay.
Wait, so when she wanted you to talk to the priest, that's when you said I'm an atheist?
Well, that's I was like, I don't know that that's really going to help me. The whole spiritual conversation never really got me anywhere. And right. She was like, let's dig into that. And I was like, we don't need to. Like, I promise you, this conversation's not going to leave you happy. So
you never had the conversation?
Oh, well, we've talked about it. She knows, but it's not there's not really a conversation to be had, right? Like, right. She is very clear in her beliefs, and I think they come to her authentically, and she's a wonderful person, partly because of that. And so I'm not trying to, like, rock her boat and get in fights with her every time it comes up, but I'm also not, like, going to go to mass every Sunday to pretend that I believe something I don't. That's okay.
And your siblings are okay with it?
Do they have a say? Like, that's the thing. Everyone... We all get along really well, and I think part of that is because we understand that we're different from each other, and we share the same core values that the family is sort of, like, built upon. So I have a really good relationship with my family, even though I very much am pretty different from a lot of them in a lot of ways.
So you haven't heard, "We love you, but you're going to hell," from any of them?
No, absolutely not.
That's good.
No, which was really, really nice, and I could have heard that, you know?
Right.
And I think a lot of kids in my situation would have heard that, but I came at it from the perspective of, like, if that is the reaction, how sad for them, you know?
Right.
And I did know that whatever their opinion on it was, it wasn't really not going to
change you.
Right. There wasn't going to be this wall in our relationship. It would just be something that's more or less comfortable.
So you told me earlier your mother, there's a cousin story there. Let's hear that.
Oh, yeah.
Dig into that a little bit.
Oh, this is so funny. Yeah. So my mom's first suggestion was that I talk to a priest. And then the second suggestion was, oh, well, you know, I have this cousin who's gay who lives in San Francisco. Maybe I should put you in touch with him. And I, of course, was a defensive teenager. Like I said, I already felt this kind of, like, distance from my mom. So I was like, no, I don't need your help. Like, I don't need to talk to your priest or your gay cousin. I'm good. Thank you. Well, little did I know.
How'd you find out? So go through the story.
Yeah. Fast forward to Christmas, a couple years later, I'm home staying with my family. So, of course, something about being trapped with your family and not being allowed to be sexual makes
you. And you're in Pennsylvania at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And going from freedom to being trapped with your family and not being allowed to be sexual, you're the horniest person you've ever seen in your entire life. Like, all I was doing was sitting on Scruff, desperately hoping that somehow one of my neighbor's dads had turned gay since I left and I would be able to sneak away or something.
So you're like daddies.
Oh yeah. As a default option, they tend to attract me. Yes. Okay. But so I'm on Scruff, the global grid gives you suggestions and knows my type and suggested this, like, hot little daddy nugget guy, muscly, big back tattoo, like a lot of things that were kind of turn-ons for me. And so, woof, woof, hey boy, what are you doing?
But he was in California.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? We're across the country from each other, so nothing's ever really going to happen anyway. But fun, a little like flirtation. Well, I wake up the next morning to a big old paragraph from him that starts with, "Hey, please don't freak out, but I'm pretty sure I know who you are. I think you're Caden Jack's son. Hi, I'm your uncle, Jeff."
Wait, if he's your mother's cousin, right?
Yes.
That makes him, I don't know how that.
I think it's my,
you're like a
I
second
think officially cousin. He's my second cousin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. In any case, so the hotness of the flirtation kind of skyrocketed even as we were.
Oh, wow.
Well, at the same time, like, oh, obviously nothing could ever happen, but how weird and horny that we were, like, both attracted to each other from across the country. Right. And I've since met up with him a few times, and he is fantastic and sort of like a gay legend. He's a former IML. He runs a barbershop near the Castro. So it's funny to, like, look back and be like, oh, well, I don't think I was wrong for rejecting my mother's help. I don't think she was really someone to be guiding me into my gayness. But if I had been a little more open-minded about it, I might have had earlier contact with this guy who, like, is a great example of how a good family member can kind of, like, be a mentor even in your homosexuality.
So you met with him and hooked up.
Sorry.
No. Choke on your water.
No. No, like, I mean, whatever. We're not going to have a messed up baby about it. Sorry, that's so bad. No, but I like,
I think that's what I said to you earlier.
Yeah, but we haven't and we won't. But it is, like, it's kind of fun that flirtation happened before we knew that it was taboo. And it's like, ooh.
So how many times have you met him? A couple times then?
Yeah, yeah. He comes and visits and we've gotten dinner and stuff. And he's got great friends. He's introduced me to some wonderful people here and in San Francisco. So,
huh.
Yeah. just kind of, and it's just like such a funny connection to, like I said, my coming out. I tried to make it so casual and so like not a thing.
Right.
That I do wonder, like, what opportunities did I pass up? If I had been just a little more flaming and raunchy about it all, like, how would it have all turned out?
Wow.
I think it's turned out just fine as I sit here again in my like 3-inch shorts in Palm Springs, California, where I like live. And currently there's the white party OnlyFans convention nonsense happening. And
is it OnlyFans or just for fans?
Oh, I never know.
I think it's just for fans.
Is it? Oh, because do we not like OnlyFans anymore? I don't use either of these services.
I don't do any of those, but no, OnlyFans is...
They're bad now, right? Like they did some policy changes.
Yeah, they're screwed over. They deleted my account like 2 years ago for basically no reason. But they're, you know, a couple years ago, they were going to get rid of all of the explicit stuff on there, which is what the site is.
Hilarious, right?
So it would be like Tumblr.
Well, like Patreon. Like we already have that. We have Patreon.
Yeah.
Where you can support creators who are doing like really kind of family friendly, whatever.
Right. You know what happened to Tumblr though, right?
Oh, yeah. Dude, poor Tumblr. RIP Tumblr.
I think, what are they, some conglomerate bought it. I think it was like, is it $2 billion they bought it for?
Huh?
And they got rid of all those nasty stuff on there. And then they ended up selling it for $3 million. It was quite a good business move, I think.
Dude, what a waste. Tumblr was perfect. It was so insane to me that they tanked it so hard. It was everything you ever, it was the Craigslist meets Facebook meets Pornhub meets Etsy. Like, you know, it,
right.
Oh gosh, I miss Tumblr.
There's a new Tumblr.
A new,
it's called New Tumblr or something like that. But they'll came off. That was years ago. I never took off.
But
it was, it's like done.
But genius branding. If you're going to try and relaunch something like that, literally just call it New Tumblr. Oh, I have to look that up. That's funny.
So you've had boyfriends, partners. What's the deal?
Yeah. So dated kind of casually through college. And by my senior year, I was seriously dating someone who lived locally in South Bend, Indiana. And he was my partner for 2.5-3 years. So for the last like year of it, we were long distance while I was in Portland and he was still in Indiana. And I was going to school. At some point he was visiting and I just like sat him down. And I was like, there's nothing really like that wrong with this relationship, but I feel like I'm not ready to never be single again. And whether that means we're open or like what that means to you, just that's pretty hard on me right now. And he was like, oh, so you want to be single? I was like, yeah. Is that okay? Like, I don't know. And it was. It wasn't like the easiest, funnest breakup in the world, but it was nice.
Did you break his heart?
I don't know that I like broke his heart super bad, but I do think it's, I imagine it was really hard from his perspective to hear it as like, there's no real reason beyond I'm at a point in my life where I'm not comfortable still being committed to anyone, you know? And so empathy for him for that. He's lovely, Kevin, and we're still keep in relative touch to the degree that I do with anyone. Yeah, but he's great. I love his dog. I think he's got a new partner who he started hitting on when we were like trying the opening up thing, at the tail end of the relationship. He's like, oh, this guy Chris in town that I actually think is cute. Do you mind if I like see him? I was like, go for it. Have fun. Then we broke up and now they're together. And I'm like, ah, you see?
Well,
go for it. Have fun.
Wow.
And I dated a little bit in Portland, but then I met my partner, John, about 8 years ago on like Pride weekend in Portland. And it was very much like one night stand who wouldn't leave kind of energy, you know, like,
which of you wouldn't leave, him or you?
Well, so at first he was sleeping over with me and then I started sleeping over with him. But one way or the other, it was like, we hooked up the next morning, exchanged numbers and like last names. Oh, also then put two and two together that I had been hooking up with his roommate for weeks at that point and had talked about him with his roommate. So John, my partner, used to manage restaurants and I was like looking for day jobs or like little part-time gigs while I was doing acting.
Right.
And so I was hooking up with this guy and he was like, well, my roommate, John, is a restaurant manager. You guys should meet. I'll like give him your name or whatever. And then, of course, 2 weeks later, I'm waking up with him in my bed and I'm like, wait.
Well, so you did meet him for the restaurant, but you met him in bed, then the restaurant.
And it was like,
two and two.
Okay. You're Eric's roommate, aren't you? Or, oh, no, it was Mark. His roommates were Eric and Mark. I got around in Portland. specifically to this one house. But no, I was like, oh, you're Mark's roommate, John. And he was like, oh, you're that John, his actor friend. Yep, put it all together. Wow. And then practically saw each other every day since. Like, it was just one of those, we didn't mean for it to be a serious long-term relationship, but there wasn't a day where I didn't want to connect with him, so.
So you live together?
Yeah. We actually just...
Oh, you just said you bought a condo?
Yeah, we just bought a condo. We're in the closing process. Well, thank you. It's one of those things where everyone tells you don't celebrate until you literally have the keys and are in the door, because anything could go wrong at any moment.
Well, I did real estate for over 30 years in Seattle, so I get it.
Mm-hmm, right. Yeah, so we're in that space right now where we're like, we got through the inspection and everything is looking okay. We're getting all the loan stuff finalized and it seems like everything is okay. So try not to get too excited too early, but it is very exciting.
When is it supposed to close?
Towards the end of April. We, our offer was accepted 24th. So we're trying to like prorate our current rental for a couple weeks in May just so that we have a little bit of a buffer to move.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. Busy, weird. Changing
time. Did you look a long time for a condo?
Not particularly. We looked for a few weeks until we found like there were like three in the past 2 weeks that really came to the surface as like, oh wow, that feels like a great deal.
And so any of those would have worked, do you think?
Yeah,
they could have.
Yeah, there was one that was actually, we were pretty convinced that we were going to put in an offer. So as we were like talking to our mortgage broker to like get next steps lined up, someone put in an offer. So you're like, oh, okay, whatever. But then we revisited one of the other ones and figure between location and layout, it actually might even be better. So oh, could have been a blessing in disguise.
Is it like a two-bedroom or what?
Mm-hmm. Two-bedroom, two-story. It's right on like, right on Arenas, around the corner from the bars. Not that I needed to be closer. But yeah, no, the location seems great and I'm just excited. And we've been together for so long at this point that it's really kind of, it's cool to be taking such a big step with him and feeling like we're kind of solidifying it even closer.
Is it ready to go or do you have to remodel it?
No, it's pretty much ready to go. And that was one of our big things was like, I'm not a projects queen. I'm busy. I love to do theater, which takes up practically every night. And I have a day job 9 to 5. I don't have the time or energy or desire to be doing like home projects.
Right.
And he's similar. He has more of a capacity for it. So he's already picked out like a few small things that he wants to do. But no, that was top of our list was it has to be practically move-in ready because we're not going to be the people who are knocking out walls or redoing the whole bathroom. Like we'll paint. Redo the facings on the light switches or whatever.
Right. Yeah. This house is my 23rd remodel. And I used to do everything myself. Like knockout walls.
Oh my God. No, could not be me. Like, that's just, I respect it. I'm love that for you. All that now, but,
you know. Although I did paint the entire house. This is a big house.
It is. Yeah.
When I tried to sell it, what, a year and a half ago, but I said, oh, I'll do it in like 4 days. So it took me like a month because I ended up taking everything out of every closet, painting everything. And blah, blah, blah.
Well, if you're going to do it right, I suppose. Yeah. All right.
So acting.
Acting.
Have you had a favorite production you've been in?
Oh, like, so it's interesting. When I was in Portland, I did a production of Mamma Mia. Okay. That was the most fun I've ever had. I did not know that it was going to be this fun. I like ABBA. I thought Mamma Mia, the musical, that is kitsch and stupid, but
right.
It was my favorite company to work for, Broadway Rose Theater Company. Shout out Portland, well, Beaverton, Oregon. They do amazing shows and they pay their actors. They really like, they do it. Right. It feels.
Are they in like a really cool theater?
Yeah.
What's the name of it?
Well, it's the Broadway Rose Theater now has their own space in Beaverton. I think you might be thinking of Portland Center Stage.
No, it wasn't Portland because Terry Ray, we know Terry. He went the last, I don't know, might have been last year now. He went up to direct a play, but he sent us the photos of the theater and it was like, oh my God, this is cool.
Yeah, no, Portland has.
We had something.
Amazing theater spaces.
Well, it wasn't in Portland. That's why it was somewhere else, but I'll have to ask where it was.
It could have been. But that was the most fun I've ever had. But when I was in Portland, I felt like it was competitive and coming out of the conservatory, I was sort of seen as sort of student plus
right.
versus like proper professional. Right. And so I was constantly in like the ensemble or smaller roles for things and loved it. Like I felt so good. every time. And then I moved here and started getting offers to do like bigger, chunkier acting parts. And it was scary and fun. And that really like kind of cool opportunity. If you're a theater kid, you always grow up fantasizing about being like the lead.
Right.
Even as you sort of know that your place is in the chorus or whatever. And so it was cool to like finally have someone be like, what if your place isn't in the chorus? What if you are supposed to be the lead? Yeah, but it was really cool. And so since moving here, the two shows that I actually won the awards for last year, the last 5 years, is a two-person musical that I've wanted to do since I was in high school. It is a really difficult singing part, so I never was confident that I had the chops for it.
Right.
And it's also, it's a two-person show. No theater picks that. And when they do pick it, they have two people in mind. It's not really like open for audition.
Right.
Well, Desert Theater Works in Indio did pick it and they didn't have people in mind. It was me.
Wow.
And it was
What was that play?
It's called The Last 5 Years.
Okay.
There is a movie version of it that I don't think does the stage version justice, but it's not bad, with Anna Kendrick and Jeremy Jordan. And I think it's on Netflix. If you're interested in musical theater, that is a lovely two-person musical with really great music by Jason Robert Brown. Yeah, so I got to do that, and I got to...
So you like musicals better than...
I lean towards musicals in terms of, like, passion. I love to sing and dance, but I also know that, like, if you're looking at triple threat type of actors, I am an actor first. I'm more skilled and sort of confident in my acting ability than anything else, so...
When you say triple threat, you mean like singing, dancing, acting?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And so actor first, then singer, and I'm confident in movement. Would never really say dancer, but...
Okay.
But I also, like, not many musicals have those, like, chunky acting roles that really, like, stretch you on how you can make an audience feel with just, like, words and persona.
Right.
And so I got to do Kafka's Joke, which was, like, a new play about Franz Kafka's like life and legacy. And I had to make this character up from scratch because no one really knows what he was like. It was right. A stylized play. And I got to have so much just like fun doing all the techniques that I studied in school and like putting them in this character. The first 8 pages were a monologue that was like a one-man show. It was so...
8 pages of monologue?
Oh, yeah. And it didn't exactly like slow down from there when the other characters came in. It was still very much like... a lot of me talking.
How do you memorize that? Because we talked earlier, I did acting class for a while. I'm sorry.
No.
My hat is off to you.
Well, just thank like, you. But like, yeah. I am lucky that it's never really been something that I need a deep technique for. It does stick in my brain after a little while. And I think part of it is because when I was in acting school, we spent so long on dissecting the subtext and the action and like, how each thought is leading into the next thought and
right.
Figuring out how your character is coming up with these lines for the first time every night. And so rather than really focusing on memorizing like word for this word leads to this word,
right?
You just practice with the script in front of you and your brain will start naturally sort of like putting those synapses together of like, oh, and when I talk about 1975, that reminds me of this thing. And that's the next line that I say, you know, so. Lucky that it's
never been. Whoever you're playing with remembers their lines to trigger you. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Had a fun experience around that one recently.
Really?
Ooh, yeah. I was in a 3-person play recently and one of the actors was just really struggling to like retain the lines, you know, character was.
And your brain is waiting for that word, that last word.
So I was like working on hyperdrive to try and like keep the scene on track in case the lines didn't happen in the order that they were supposed to.
Right.
But yeah, always interesting. But yeah, no, I've been very lucky that the memorization piece of it hasn't always been that difficult. It's really just like, who is the character? Like, why are we saying this tonight? You know?
So do you paraphrase a lot? Do you think?
No, I don't. And like, I'm a weird like perfectionist about it sometimes, but I tend to think that I give playwrights too much credit. But generally speaking, the words are important.
Well, you know, Stan Zimmerman.
Yeah. Right?
So of course, I worked with him on our last play. He was a guest director, but I listened to a lot of his he was podcast guest. Before I met him, I wanted to, you know, get the deal on him. But he talks about that and he says, because he's a writer also. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a playwright, but and he's an actor and he does all his stuff directing. But he said every word is important because he talks about like when he was writing for Golden Girls or whatever, you know, like the sentence or the word or the period or the, you know.
Well, especially when it's all
play. Important.
Like Golden Girls is so wordplay and punny and the flow of the jokes. Yeah, like you don't want to be changing words like that. And my feeling of it is if you were an actor who finds yourself instinctively paraphrasing a lot, you probably haven't gone deep enough into why your character chose the words that are on the page.
Right.
Because if you knew why they would say the words that are on the page, your instinct would be to say the words that are on the page, right? So that, I mean, not to say that I'm perfect, but no, I don't think I paraphrase a lot. And I think it just comes from when I read a script, I do tend to think that like each word is important. There's a reason your character would say that specifically in that order, right? Because sometimes people say things and the words are jumbled and out of order and it's coming from a place of like distress or like just something is going on. So if a playwright writes words and you're like, well, that's not the flow. It should be this. No, it should be what's on the page. And you need to figure out how to get there.
Right. Ugh. Mm. So what do you got coming up?
So I'm finishing up a run of Mid-Century Moderns, which is a fun little like 60s jukebox musical that is at Revolution Stage Company. And it's been running off and on for like 2 years now. So that's running for another 2 weeks. And then I've loved it, but it's time for it to go to bed for a little while. Happy to be done. And so we'll take the summer off, do some auditions and see what comes next. I've got Desert Ensemble Theater is one of my favorite theaters to work with. And I've covertly agreed to do something with them that I'm not allowed to talk about yet.
Oh, really? What?
Exactly. No, but so keep an eye out for the Desert Ensemble Theater season announcement because I'm really excited about a play that I will get to do with them. Hopefully, all things working out.
Right.
Yeah. We'll see.
As I'm wrapping up, I always ask this question. So what have you learned in your life? What do you go by? Some of the mottos. What are life lessons you've learned that are part of you now?
It's funny because I have listened to a few of your interviews and I've seen the titles of some of the rest of them. And I think it's probably a running theme in general is that like it's not being afraid and releasing yourself from the possibility of shame is like the thing for me. Like I said, I grew up doing theater and singing and these things that I loved. And I was, by all accounts, like quite bad. I genuinely was not.
You're not just your worst critic?
No.
Like you really were bad, you think?
I certainly don't think I was very good, you know? And in high school, when the competition pool is like with nothing, I wasn't getting leads in the musicals. I wasn't getting leads in the plays. And that's okay. Like I was getting what I was giving. And what I was giving was, I'm really scared to be bad at this, but I love doing it. So here, let me get up and just like try, but not try too hard. So you think that this is the best I can do. You know, it's that thing where like by not just committing and giving it really the best shot and seeing where I stood, I lost like years of what could, like maybe I was good, but like the fear and the possibility of the shame of failure was like, well, no, I'm just not that good. I couldn't possibly.
Oh.
You know?
Did you not get any feedback? Did you get feedback that you were bad or good or anything? Or
what? Well, no, that's the thing. The feedback was like, oh, yeah, you're perfectly fine. Like
But you didn't believe that.
Well, it wasn't even necessarily that, but it's like you sing on key. You remember your lines and you seem to know who your character is. You know, it was like, yes, generically, you are successful at this. But the potential, like no one was ever thinking that I was leading man. No one was ever thinking that I was soloist in the chorus. And that's because I wasn't putting that energy out there, right? It's because I wasn't like committing to really just trying my best. And even if by trying my best, then what you hear is, no, you're actually not good at this. Well, that's at least something. Then at least you actually know what's possible. But I was comfortable with, okay, if it's not too scary, I do okay. And it's like, who wants to just do okay? And that I think translates to a lot of my life. Like I just, by not being as scared of like, what if failure or what if embarrassment I first of all run into it less. You know, yeah. Like you, it's funny the way that you start succeeding once you stop being so scared of failing. And then also it's like when it does happen, you realize, oh no, okay, moving on. Like there's plenty more.
Right.
Nothing is actually that sacred and important that it's worth stopping yourself from trying and trying full out.
What will it matter 100 years from now?
What will it matter 100 years from now? Well, it's...
Enjoy it. Enjoy the ride now.
The Broadway Rose Company in Portland that I said that I love.
Right.
I had the most amazing audition experience there right before I left. And I think about this, and this may have been like kind of transformative in terms of like advice and experience. I sing bass for chorus.
Okay.
And I was auditioning for this musical, and the artistic director, she's lovely. She likes me. She's like, John, like, thank you. You sounded good. Could you try that song in the original key? And if you crack on the high note, crack on the high note. Like, I really don't care, but just like go for it and sing full out and just see what happens. And I sort of did. And I also sort of bailed because I knew that I hadn't practiced it that way. And it wasn't like, and I think just by asking me to do that and putting me in that position, she showed me like, yeah, you're not going to get the part if you go in and do the easy song that you know is easy and looks easy. You have to go and do the thing that feels impressive and scary. And if you fail, you fail. But if you succeed, that's success.
Right.
You know, and there's 1,000 opportunities for it. So why not go for it every time?
What else have you learned? You've been around a couple years. Come on.
Yeah. Get tested regularly.
Moisturize.
That is actually a big one because
I failed at that and I'm paying the price. But anyway.
No, but just living in the sunshine. I love the sun. It's why I live here. And I don't get sunburned as easily, but my skin does get dry. And it is not fun.
So we have this dry heat, which does that. But so do you like the weather here better than Portland?
Oh, infinitely. That is not a question. This is the best weather of anywhere that I've lived. And I think it's a huge reason why I chose to live here.
Right.
You know, Portland, I will say Portland is temperate. The summer is lovely. The culture is great. Lots of things that I love about that city. What I did not love, not seeing the sun very much.
Well, I used to say when I was in Seattle, which I was there for decades, those 2 or 3 months are really nice.
Oh, exactly.
And they seriously make you forget the other, you know, 9 months. It's crazy.
Yeah. And they trick you.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah. If you come and visit Portland at some point in like September or like late June, you are absolutely going to be convinced that it's the most beautiful city in the world, and you are not wrong for a couple of months.
Right.
The rest of it is gloomy.
Well, sir, when you're ready to do the movie, we'll have you back on here. We'll do part two.
Perfect.
Otherwise, it was great meeting you in that bathroom.
Oh, it's, you know, I get that a lot.
I've read about that on the
The internet, the stall wall. John was here.
Out again.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, thanks for coming in.
Really, oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been fun.